This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Hour number three, Barton Hahn, ESPN Radio, ESPN. Hey, wait a minute. We've got to do this the right way, Bart.
Yes, you didn't
ask
me.
If it's hour number three, what hour is it?
The power hour.
I'm trying, man.
The power hour?
I wanted to get the gong.
The hour hour.
The gong is like the most the essential piece of the power hour, and it's I don't think it's coming through as
no,
well.
You can hear it as well. Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can. I don't feel like you can hear it as well. I'm really disappointed. Well, it's a virtual gong today.
Well, listen, go upstairs into your kitchen.
Yeah.
Grab a pan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Grab a thing, and then there you go. Yeah. Get your homemade gong.
Yeah, that's
come on, man.
Do.
Stop
I'll
like you don't know how to improvise.
Yeah. All right. So tomorrow, I promise. Tomorrow.
Hold on. One sec. Hold on. I'll do it for us.
You're going to do it for us?
Yeah, hold on.
All right. Go ahead. Hurry up. As you know, everybody, we are not in studio this week. Bart is going to be in Baltimore this week because he's doing great stuff with charity endeavors that he always does for Thanksgiving week. So that's why this is improvising.
All right, you ready?
We are improvising.
Let's do it again.
All right, ready? Now, you want me to say power hour?
You're
still going to do it.
You say power hour.
All right. The power hour. Wait a minute, man. It just sounds so weak. Yeah. No.
Nope.
All right. We need more power. The only way to get power is to go with Chris Canty.
Big Chris Canty.
On the Goodyear hotline. CC, we're improvising this week. I don't think Bart's gong sounded nearly as tough as our gong in the studio, but it's the best we got.
Yeah, it's not the same gong, but it's for good reason, Al. And you pointed out the work that Bart does down in Baltimore. I actually had a chance to be a part of it one year. Jamil McClain wrote me in on it. And I just want to give Bart Scott another shout-out for all the things that he does in the community still. He doesn't have to do them, but it just shows you how big his heart is. So big ups to you, my brother.
I appreciate it, man. Likewise, man. We all out here in these streets, and that's one of the most underreported things about guys from the fraternity, what they do. We all have our causes. We all try and support each other. And sometimes that's the message that don't get sent. Unfortunately, the narrative like Zach Stacy, that's what people think we are when those are the outliers, not the norm.
We need to shed light on all the good things that you guys do, and that's what we try to do. And that's what this week is all about for our listeners. Again, we thank you for bearing with us and for putting up with the improvised gong. Meanwhile, Chris, another day yesterday in the NFL, and it's what's up is down and what's down is up. But we do have one more game tonight. What kind of chance do you give the Giants? Now they got Saquon back. Daniel Jones gets another weapon back. Can the Bucs be yet another top seed, another top team in a division to go down this week? Could they go to three straight L's?
Well, I don't anticipate that happening, Allen, because you're talking about back-to-back games with Tom Brady having multiple turnovers. I anticipate that not being the case in tonight's matchup, especially with the Bucs being at home. But that being said, if the Giants are going to pull off the upset, that's what it's going to have to be. And that's what they did against Kansas City in a game that was a one-possession match. And then you had that against the Las Vegas Raiders in the win at home a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I think if the Giants defense and Patrick Graham can continue that formula, being able to force multiple turnovers, create some short fields for that offense, then you at least got a shot to make it a fourth-quarter game. If you looked at their game last year in primetime, that was a closely contested game. You talked about a couple of second-half turnovers by Daniel Jones being the difference. So, to me, turnovers are going to play a huge role if the Giants are going to have any path to victory.
Now, how big is the loss of Logan Ryan? Because you talk about being able to match up maybe with all these tight ends. No Jabril Peppers, no Logan Ryan. How big of it is of an uphill battle is it for them to try and slow down this AB-less type of Tom Brady offense, knowing that he may be getting Gronk back?
Well, Bart, this is going to be huge. His absence looms large, and it's not even just the matchup from a personnel standpoint. I'm looking at the communication, because we all know when it comes to veteran quarterbacks, especially guys that have seen as much football as Tom Brady, your secondary can't let Tom Brady know what coverage he's in pre-snap. Like they can't. They absolutely can't. They got to do a good job of disguising, and Logan Ryan is the quarterback of that secondary. So if you don't necessarily have him, then you're not talking about having guys in position to be able to show the same type of disguises, you know, lining up in single high and then going to a two-shell coverage or lining up in a two-shell and going to man coverage. Those types of things matter when you're playing a quarterback like Tom Brady that has all the answers for all the different coverage looks in the NFL. The only way you trip up Tom Brady is by not allowing him to know what you're in, and then coupling that with being able to put pressure, especially in the middle of the pocket. I think the Giants, in that regard, are equipped when you start talking about Big Cat and Austin Johnson and Dexter Lawrence. Those guys can put some pressure in the middle of the pocket, but it's making sure that rush and coverage is tied together, and those guys on the back end do a good job of not tipping their hand when it comes to what they're playing against Brady.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you, if the Giants win, I know we're going to hypotheticals, but I want to know what you'd feel about both teams. If the Giants somehow pull out the win here tonight, Monday Night Football, how does your feeling about both these teams change when we come to tomorrow morning or when you begin your show tomorrow?
Tampa Bay all of a sudden falls back to the pack in the NFC. I think that they're one of the teams that we all expected would be there in the end just because they returned all their starters from the Super Bowl group a year ago. I get that a bunch of those guys are hurt, but the expectation is that they're going to get healthy and they're going to be able to go on a run down the stretch. But if Tampa Bay loses this game, then I don't think we can consider them in the same class as the Dallas Cowboys, the Green Bay Packers, the Arizona Cardinals, or maybe even the L.A. Rams. So I think, you know, Tampa, for me, would fall into that next tier with New Orleans, Minnesota, Philadelphia, and Carolina. Like, that's kind of how I would view them. But if the Giants win this game, I think it's a step in the right direction. I still wouldn't consider them any better than third best in their division, and I think based on the standings, that's exactly where they'd be. But they're not as good as Philadelphia. They're not as good as Dallas. So I don't necessarily look at the Giants being, you know, pulling off the upset as – some type of prelude to them going on a playoff run. I don't anticipate it with this particular team, but I think it could be a huge pop, a huge confidence builder for Daniel Jones, and it'd be a huge confidence builder for Joe Judge in terms of being able to establish his program with this team.
It's so interesting that you say the Philadelphia Eagles, because all of a sudden the Philadelphia Eagles seem to have their QB1.
Yeah.
Do you think that they have their QB1? And with all the draft equity that they're going to have, because it looks like they're going to get 3 first-round draft picks, it looks like Carson Wentz is going to finish the season up right now. I know I'm just kind of jumping ahead of pulling the cart before the horse, but do you think that Jalen Hurts is the answer? And what's the future like with the Eagles when you think that they're going to have 3 first-round draft picks next year?
Well, let me answer that question this way, Bart. Are the Eagles a live dog to make the playoffs? If you look at the remainder of their schedule, I would say absolutely. They ain't got nothing but NFC East games left and the New York Jets. They got 2 against the Giants, 2 against the football team, and 1 against the Cowboys. And they have the bye week in week 14. So, I think this Eagles team is absolutely going to be a playoff contender. Of their final 6 games, I would probably have them favored in 5 of them. And if they can continue to run the football and take care of the ball the way that they have this year, I mean, you're talking about being through 11 games this season, Bart, and only having 9 turnovers. So, I mean, if your offense can have that kind of efficiency, running the ball, taking care of the ball, and then, the defense being able to try to come to the party and be a complement to that, then you've got a shot. I mean, Darius Slay seems like he makes a big play, a turnover for a touchdown every single week nowadays. So, I mean, like, if your defense can do that, be opportunistic in that way, and then your offense can control time of possession and dictate the complexion of the game, then, yeah, I think that Philadelphia can be a playoff contender. And if they're a playoff team, how could you not think that Jalen Hurts is their quarterback of the future? So, yeah, I think the future is really bright for the Eagles. They're ahead of expectations. I was shocked by the outcome of yesterday's game. But when you actually look at the way that this team has been trending the last month or so, I shouldn't be.
You know, I tell you what, when you look at the remaining schedule, just 4 wins gets them to 9. And who thought of that, of the Eagles and this very young coaching staff when this season began? And speaking of, and we're talking with Chris Canty on the Goodyear Hotline, speaking of young, the Jets have the youngest roster in the league. Did they waste a game playing Joe Flacco, or did he allow us to see not only what Michael Carter can do, but also what Elijah Moore can do, And those are two very important pieces of draft picks that Joe Douglas has brought to this team. And we saw that on display yesterday, especially with Moore.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's an argument to be made that because Joe Flacco can operate the offense at a level that the young guys can't, you can see more from some of the other skill position players on his team, but you still lost the game. And so, I mean, if you're going to lose the game, at least lose with the purpose of being able to develop one of those young quarterbacks, because that's what this season was ultimately all about. It was about Zach Wilson's development. And when Zach Wilson went down, it's about trying to develop Mike White and seeing if he can be a viable option at the quarterback spot for this team, not as your franchise guy, but potentially as a backup or as an asset that you can then use in order to turn into more players to help be a part of the supporting cast for your young franchise quarterback. So to me, I didn't understand the decision to start Joe Flacco last week, and it makes even less sense now that you see the outcome of the game.
Now, this is something that we differed on last week as well. And a lot of guys in studio, LeJay Duzibel and Willie Colon, disagreed with me as well. But I just believe that if you would have played Mike White, you never would have got a chance to get the offense going, because it was tough for Joe Flacco to figure out where they were coming from. And one time, you know, you look at Vera Tucker, they let the free runner go on the outside. Joe Flacco gets hit in the back, and there goes the fumble.
Yep.
But for the most part, Joe Flacco had a plan. He got him in good running plays to try and give us opportunity to be able to assess like what the playmakers can do. And I think the Jets have hit on Vera Tucker. I think that you look at now what Michael Carter, I know he got injured, but he was balling. And you look at Elijah Moore. Yeah. They have three guys from this draft that they can count on. And I was talking to Rex, and I never really thought about this. Because this new offensive scheme really doesn't fit Mekhi Becton, he was thinking that Mekhi Becton should be the future right tackle for this team, that heavy-handed guy that you run to and you put the tight end to. And because Fant is built for this type of scheme, hasn't given up a sack this year. Don't know if that sack goes on him, the one that comes off the edge with that caused the fumble. But, you know, 328 snaps, I believe, without a sack. What do you think about the idea of moving Becton to the right side? They got Duvernay there that struggled a little bit, but the opportunity to go get a center and really solidify that offensive line.
Listen, the offensive line is absolutely a priority for this team. And the amount of times that they let the quarterback get hit, it's not ideal. So, yeah, I'm all about any potential changes that could upgrade that offensive line. But I think when it comes to the overall picture, it's mostly about trying to do everything that you can as an organization in order to get the most out of your quarterbacks. And so I think that, you know, Mike LaFleur and Rob Saleh, they got to look at, from a personnel standpoint, do they have the right people in the right roles in order to maximize the talent level? And do they have a plan in terms of the identity that they want this team to have? Because right now, you know, you don't have any semblance of an identity on this team. You don't. You're trying to develop one with Michael Carter in the run game. I mean, I like that direction that they're going in, and then utilizing Elijah Moore in shot plays and play action. That's all well and good, but it needs to be a lot more consistent than it was, especially when it comes to situational football. And yesterday, the thing that came back to bite them is not being able to perform in the red zone. I mean, you're 1-for-4 in the red zone, and then your kicker missed, you know, a gimme shot from 40 yards away. Like, those types of things can't happen. You can't give away those types of plays. So I guess when it comes to, you know, the confidence level that I have in Rob Saleh, right now I'm still optimistic, but there are some things that give me some concern because of the lack of consistency from week to week, especially what we're seeing on both sides of the ball, on offense and on defense.
Chris Kenny joining us on the Goodyear Hotline. Alan Hom, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. Bart didn't really want to believe much in what he's seeing out of the Kansas City Chiefs. Was that game yesterday more about what the Dallas Cowboys weren't or couldn't do, or was it the Chiefs are, as we're trying to figure out, back?
Well, the Chiefs are back, Alan. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are a team that's built to be led by their offense. And their offense scored 19 points yesterday. Like, we can't say they're back. I mean, over the last four games, the four-game win streak, they scored 20 points, 13 points. They had the outburst against the Vegas Raiders, who can't stop anybody. They scored 41. and then they got 19 yesterday. So I'm not going to say they're back. What I will say is that the guys up front for Kansas City, Frank Clark and Chris Jones, the guys that are getting paid $20-plus million a year, they actually showed up and played like $20-plus million a year players. I mean, Chris Jones had 3.5 sacks, and I think he contributed to what? 3 turnovers. He had a fumble recovery. He had a forced fumble, and then he forced a pick at the end of that game. So, like, if he can do that and play at that level, and I think them moving him from defensive end to defensive tackle, letting him be on the outside shoulder of the guard, has made a lot of difference in terms of bumping up that pass rush. If they can affect opposing quarterbacks the way that they affected Dak Prescott, then that defense is going to give them an opportunity in a lot of games. I mean, they've got 3 consecutive games forcing multiple turnovers, and I think that's ultimately what's the difference in Kansas City. Now, it's a scary proposition, Allen, when you think about it, because the majority of the talent on this Chiefs team is on the offensive side of the ball. And you got to think, they're winning games without that side of the ball playing its best football. So going into the bye week, like, this is one of those scary teams to watch in the AFC, especially when we get into the month of December, because, like, that offense at any given point in time can start clicking again, and then you got all kinds of problems. Like, this Chiefs team is turned their season around, and now you got to say they're the favorites in the AFC West, and they're probably one of the top 3 favorites in the conference as a whole based on how everybody else is playing.
Well, Chris, one of those teams that we thought was a Super Bowl contender was the Buffalo Bills, and I think they were exposed to the fact I think they were exposed by the fact of how they're built. They're built to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, who they've lost to the last couple of years. But what they failed to realize is they have to get there to be able to have the right to face them. So I look at teams that's going to get them problems. The Colts are going to give them problems because they can mad dog them in between the trenches. Then the Titans are going to give them problems. But the last team is the team that's the most important one, is the New England Patriots, who have the recipe and the style of play to cause them trouble. Are they in trouble of not winning the division and also getting bounced? Because they need other teams to beat those physical teams so that they can get to Kansas City.
Hell yeah, they're in trouble for not winning the division. You seen the way New England played the last 5 weeks?
Here they come.
That offensive line, as big and as physical as they are, that offensive line in the run game can present problems for the Buffalo Bills. And in that defense, that is one of the most elite units in all of football. That is a really good defense. And if you look at the 2001 Patriots defense versus this defense, there are a lot of similarities. And you can go to all 3 levels and look at the players that they have. This is a special defense. And I'm not sure that people around the NFL can appreciate what this Patriots defense is bringing to the table. And so from a week-to-week basis, I trust New England and their consistency more than any other team in all of football. So, yes, the Buffalo Bills are in trouble. When they're playing against a team that has an offensive line and a semblance of a run game, they're going to have problems being able to stop that. They've shown that this year. It popped up yesterday because Jonathan Taylor was hitting his head on the goalpost routinely. And the thing to me that was most telling, guys, after that first possession in the second half for the Indianapolis Colts, Frank Reich said in a post-game interview with Peter King, he made a commitment after he was forced from field goal range and he had to punt. He said, on first and second down the rest of the game, I'm going to run the football. And they had 18 first and second down plays the rest of the game. They ran the football on 17 of them. On 17 of them. You're not a good defense if you know they're going to run the ball. They're telling you they're going to run the ball, and you can't stop it. You're not a good defense. That's where I am with the Buffalo Bills. All of those fancy rankings and stats and numbers, that's a product of playing against bad teams that can't control the line of scrimmage. They're not going to see that next week. They're not going to see that the following week or the following week after that, because they got New Orleans, New England, and they got Tampa. So good luck.
When a team imposes its will on you in your building, that's when it's time to sound the alarm. And in Buffalo, as Chris Canty just said, they need to sound the alarm. Chris, great stuff as always. Thank you so much. Hey, my friend, have a great Thanksgiving.
Appreciate it, guys. Absolutely, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Likewise.
All right, Chris Canty giving us a straight talk. A lot of straight talk there. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Well, you heard him. He said, you know, he's optimistic, but still some concern when it comes to Robert Saleh, the head coach of the Jets. One of his biggest critics, however, had a bit of a change of heart over the weekend. Hear what he had to say coming up next. We have your calls, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 as well. But first, I want to tell you that you need to join host Gautam Chopra. Right now, as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports, a companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries. This 10-part podcast examines the improbable, ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. We got your calls and what was said about Robert Saleh coming up next. Barton Hunt, ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max.
Me being me, allow me to be me. Don't try to turn me into something that I'm not.
Followed by Green.
And that game yesterday, if I'm a fan of the Bears, they were playing with a quarterback who looks like he might be outstanding.
Spend your mornings with us right here on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bart and Hahn.
All right, welcome back, Bart and Hahn. Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. All right, so we go another game and another loss for the New York Jets. Still no Zach Wilson, the number two overall pick in the NFL draft. They hold him out for yet another game, although he did practice during the week, but we did get to see, as we mentioned with Chris Canty, Elijah Moore, who just had a fantastic game. Again, not on the scoreboard, but for him personally, it's good to see a rookie perform. Michael Carter has been a revelation as running back. I mean, what a playmaker he is turning out to be. You have him, and as you mentioned, also Vera Tucker, the second round pick, right? The left guard. Left guard, right. He has graded very well week after week, and he's really turning into something special. So from that standpoint, okay, you're seeing some pieces of Joe Douglas's draft that are turning out. But as I mentioned, Chris Canty did say that he has some optimism about Robert Saleh, but still some concern about him as head coach of the Jets. And both he and Douglas have taken a lot of criticism at the leadership and decision-making that they have made throughout this season with this team, a very young team, the youngest in the league. And that also includes starting the season without a true veteran with experience on the roster. Now, they go and get one in Joe Flacco, but they had to go get one to do that. And so with that in mind, your former coach, Rex Ryan, the guy you do Organized Chaos with, a podcast each week, really just tore into Robert Saleh last week after they got smoked by the Bills, saying, don't ever compare me to this guy, and many other things of criticism about the Jets head coach. And then Saleh had his response to Rex about he knows where to find me and he always has something to say. So it got ugly. And it, you know, it's one of those things that you wonder where it will go from here. And Rex Ryan on Sunday Countdown said that, you know what, he reached out to Robert Saleh. He talked to Robert Saleh, and since speaking with him, he had a bit of a change of heart. Let's take a listen.
The more I talk to him, the more I'm like, wow, this dude, number one, this is a smart guy. Like, if you don't think that he's disappointed in how his defense is performing, you're wrong. Of course he is. But he also has a big picture view of this is the issues that I'm having. You know, in my opinion, this issue's not going to be solved until the offseason. But he's got a vision for this team that I don't think any of us knew public-wise because it wasn't really shared. He doesn't share that vision or whatever with everybody, but I can assure you it's there. And when I talk to him, I'm like, damn, I hate to say this, but this, I guess I was wanting him to be a jerk, but he was the exact opposite, man. Like, he's a hell of a guy, and he's smart, and I think he's on the right track.
So, Bart, you were one that stayed consistent as everybody else was going crazy. I mean, everybody was losing their minds about this Joe Flacco decision, and more criticism heaped on Robert Saleh. Questions about whether or not he's even the right guy for the job came from many places. Some former Jets coach, obviously, Jets fans in the business. But you stayed consistent the whole way, saying, no, I know what they're doing. You understood it and all that stuff. Were you happy to see that Rex had that opportunity to get involved, like to have that conversation, to get the understanding of it, and then to hear how Rex, now his whole opinion has changed on the direction of the franchise and their choice at head coach?
Well, this is the thing, right? What people have to understand is me and Rex get paid for our opinions, and our opinions are never going to be on the fence. They're going to be on one side or the other side. And that just comes with the territory. But, you know, I thought Saleh made a mistake by even worrying about what anybody's saying, because the only people that should matter is the people within inside that building. Now, the fact that he's won Rex's opinion over and stuff like that, that still means absolutely nothing to me, right? Because that shouldn't matter either. Rex's disapproval or approval, right? Now, like, okay, now he has an adversary ally in Rex, but, you know, that still doesn't, you know, take from the fact that doesn't help him or hurt him. Maybe gets his message out a little bit more. He just has to continue to be a coach and understand that, listen, it's not how you start in this league, right? Because we've seen a lot of guys come into New York and start off very well and ends badly. So the fact is he's starting off badly and he's trying to get his program together. He has a lot of people he has to bring in. He has a lot of holes to plug on the defensive side of the ball. They thought that, you know, the two safeties were going to be there. Looks like neither one of them are going to be there. They're going to be in the market to try and get some top-notch safeties in draft. I think they're good at corner. And with their draft position and capital, they're going to be in the position to go get a good center, and they're going to be in a great position to potentially go get maybe the second-best pass rusher in the game to put him opposite of Carl Lawson if we ever see him. You know, so I think they have an ability to be able to have a good defensive line, but it's going to take time to build. And that's usually how it happens. When Pete Carroll got there, they didn't just become the Legion of Boom day one. They became the Legion of Boom about a year or two later. When Kyle Shanahan got there, they were a debacle, right? And then they went to the Super Bowl in the third year. It takes time. He's been a part of a team that makes that process, but you still have to get to the part of winning. But all those places I named isn't New York. You have to learn how to navigate through New York, and you do that by staying even keel, answering the questions, don't duck anything, and don't be arrogant enough to think that you're the smartest man in the building.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Your comments, your thoughts on Rex Ryan's kind of change of heart when it comes to Robert Saleh. What I want to know is, what did he tell him? What is that plan? Do you have any insight on that? What is the plan?
He probably didn't say nothing.
He must have told Rex.
He probably didn't say nothing, but he probably said, listen, man, we got to get some trash out from Adam Gase's draft, right, with some guys we got to get rid of, right? And it, you know, really hurt us that we didn't have Carl Lawson, because you look at what Franklin Myers was. Now, Franklin Myers, I believe, is playing hurt. That's why since he got the Brinks truck backed up to him, I don't think he's made as many splashy plays, because he's trying to grit through it. But if you think you have Carl Lawson, you think that, okay, we know Quinnen Williams can play. We know that Franklin Myers can play. We know Sheldon Rankins can play. But, you know, they just got to get healthy, and they got to get some more depth on that side of the ball. You know, you got to get some safeties, right? You think about the kid, I think his name was Joyner, who got hurt at the beginning of the season, that they had brought in, you know, a veteran and to pair with Marcus May. So they're the youngest team in the NFL right now. Whenever you have the youngest team in the NFL, you give up stupid passes like a wheel route from the inside guy. When you're the third player, you're looking at number one. Your number one goes out, and you watch the number two receiver go right behind you. You're supposed to have the deep thirds. That was the fifth corner on their roster, maybe the sixth corner on their roster. And that's what happens when you put that type of talent out there. They're talent deficient in certain spots, and they couldn't afford to have injuries. And that's the one thing that they got. They got plenty of injuries this year, whether you talk about Marcus May, Joyner, Becton, all those pieces. You know, they needed to be 100% to be able to even be able to compete. They're not 100%. They got a lot of injuries, and that's why they're suffering.
You think that's what happens too? Like, when you're in a rebuild, and especially in New York, because there's so much intensity on the coverage, that – there's things that you want to say, but you know you can't, because I'm playing right now. These guys are playing. I can't tell you publicly, listen, this guy sucks and we're moving on from him, but we're stuck in him this year, so we got to play him.
Yeah.
Like, this guy's just not ready. Like, he's just a kid and he's making mistakes, but I have no one else, so I got to play him. Like, are there things that you know but you can't say when you're in that position that, like, at the end of the season will all make sense once we get to that point?
Yeah, certain things are only said by the winners, right? And when you're not winning, you can't say anything. You got to eat it. You can't say this dude sucks. Yep. It sounds like you're making excuses. Can't say, okay, man, listen, this guy should be only a special teams guy, but now we have him playing and playing meaningful snaps. You can't say that. You can't say, hey, Wilson right now, his confidence is down and it's in here and his fundamentals is jacked up. So we brought in Beck so that he can try and feel comfortable. Feel when he looks in the room, he has somebody that he can relate to, somebody that knows him and knows how his mechanics looks when he's on point. And, hey, we lost Knapp, so, like, we lost the ability to really have somebody to be able to nurture him and tutor him because he's not like Mac Jones. He's not like Justin Herbert. He's not like Joe Burrow. He didn't play a lot in college. So, you know, his lack of experience is apparent.
Yeah, it's and obviously he hasn't played now in a couple of weeks, so it'll be interesting to see when he does come back if he looks any different now that he's watched a Mike White shine at some points and also see – Joe Flacco.
Josh Johnson,
I mean, again,
too.
Didn't really
watch Josh Johnson. Josh Johnson lit it up. Joe Flacco almost threw for 300 yards, man. Come on, man. Joe Flacco,
in the red zone, nothing happened.
Yeah, but who fault was that? That was the inexperience of the offensive line, right? Joe Flacco was right there to get it done, got hit in the back of the head, and then they missed three field goals. So, I mean, you take that there, you put a touchdown there, even another field goal, they win the game. They put up 27 points, which is more than what Mahomes put up. So it's all about how you look at things.
True. And, again, Rex has a different opinion now after talking with Saleh, which also tells you Robert Saleh personally, like I said, he's so likable at the podium. You want to cheer for him. You want to root for him. So that came through when he and Rex got together. You have to feel better about this, though, right? Because you know the last thing you need in Jets world is to have that kind of beef. You love Rex too much to not want him, you know, to make sure his code still works when he hangs around when he goes to Florham Park, right?
Oh, good, man. He's good, man. Like, but he's a stand-up man because he could have said, man, I ain't calling this dude. Who cares?
That's
but, you know, he went out there. He said, you know what? I'll be the bigger man, and I'll reach out. He said, call him. I know where to call him.
Maybe
I'll call
Saleh,
him.
Maybe Saleh needs a new defensive coordinator. Hey, Rex.
No, Rex's not going to do that. I talked to Rex a little bit. I said, hey, Rex, you know, listen, you know, looks like the Raiders. If anybody looks like a Raiders coach, it's Rex Ryan. If anybody can come out there and take somebody that's used to be the bad guys, it's supposed to be the bad guys, the tough guys, and make them tough, Rex Ryan. So, like, I mean, you look at that's going bad right there, Rex Ryan has had conversations with him before. We talked about it on Organized Chaos. It'd be perfect to be able to try and reunite that.
Oh, look at you. Look at you starting rumors. Organized Chaos, a podcast that Rex Ryan and Bart Scott do every week. You can get it wherever you hear your podcast. Just hit subscribe. All right, coming up, so can a healthy Giants squad or getting healthy Giants squad, can they get a big win tonight on Monday Night Football? And if they do, could it jumpstart a playoff push that John Winthrop refuses to let go of? He really thinks this can happen. Do you? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's coming up on Barton Hunt, ESPN Radio.
Keyshawn Johnson.
You're done with Tua. You're done with it. So you're moving him.
Jay Williams.
For the first time in Joel Embiid's career, you're telling me they did a team bonding experience on the road?
And now, Max Kellerman.
You want to play for the tie and lose an over? No, go for the win.
Weekday mornings at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN2. Bart and Han.
Welcome back, Barton Hahn, Alan Hahn, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Time now, Bart, to give everybody a Monday Night Football preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. I know it's crazy talk, but this is a very, very pivotal game for the Giants tonight. They play the Bucs. The Bucs have lost two in a row. You know they might have Gronk back. But you're playing in Tampa. They should be the superior team, but they have been the Bucs the last couple of games. And remember, Bruce Arians, right? We're a dumb team. Like, he's really ripped his players the last couple of weeks. If you get this win, think about this. I'm going to give you the pocket of the schedule. This was, remember that bunch of games that we said you got Chiefs, Raiders, Bucs before you get a little bit of a soft part of the schedule. If you can get two games here, it really sets you up. Well, they have one so far. This would give them two out of the three, which we called. Then it's Eagles, Dolphins, Chargers, Cowboys, Eagles, Bears, Washington.
The Eagles don't seem like such a gimme anymore, do it?
I know. Well, the Eagles are looking at the Giants like, hey, we got two against the Giants. But if you're the Giants, you say we got two against the Eagles. What I mean is not that those are winnable games at this point because the Eagles are a lot better, but just the fact that these become important games. And division games are always, you never know with division games because of the rivalry and everything else that's crazy about it. And you're going to look back. What was the game? Was it Washington? Yes, it was Washington.
Yeah,
where you jump offside, the field goal thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that's frustrating. Losing to the Falcons the way you did. Those are the games that will come back and haunt you. But still, is it crazy to say that that tonight's game would be a pivotal game for the Giants?
Oh, of course, they're all pivotal, right? Especially when you talk about Tampa Bay and the fact that they don't have a secondary. So you went out and you spent all this money on Galladay. Mm-hmm. You bought Rudolph in. You got Ingram. You got Saquon Barkley coming back. You should be able to take advantage of this Bucs secondary. And without this Bucs secondary, their pass rush struggles as well. That's why you see Todd Bowles, who likes to blitz, be a little bit more conservative. I mean, hell, Richard Sherman pulled a muscle in warm-ups. Like, that's how bad they are. First of all, they got this guy off the couch, and he's been injured since he got there, but that's the best they have. And, you know, so you would think that this Giants defense would be able to try and take advantage because no matter all the weapons that they have, the guy who makes this offense go seems to be Antonio Brown. And you know that he doesn't have him. So let's see if this Giants defense, who has a lot of high-priced players on it. I know Martinez is gone and no Logan Ryan tonight, but that defensive line, they spent a lot of money on it. And you look on the outside of Dory Jackson, Bradbury, those are two lockdown corners that you spend high money on. Let's see if they can step up.
All right, we shall see. All right, so that's our Monday night preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection just got easier with more than 30 coverage options available. Progressive has you covered. More at progressivecommercial.com. All right, so if you missed any portion of the show, Chris Mortensen was on with us. We had Chris Canty as well. Had very interesting things to say about tonight's game, about the Cowboys, and also about the Jets and their situation. If you missed any of that, you can catch all 3 hours of Barton Hahn Posted Daily as a podcast available wherever you listen to your podcast. Just subscribe and you won't miss a thing. What are you expecting tonight from the Giants, Bar? What are you expecting from this game? Brady and the Bucks, are they going to answer, or do you think that this will be a good one to finish out Week 11?
Well, Danny Dimes always play well against Tampa. They did last year. So let's see if they can step up. I think this is not going to be a gimme. I think this is going to be a good game that's going to come down to the wire. Let's see if Danny Dimes can step up and put the league on notice because he's fighting for his future, not to become another Sam Darnold.
All right, well, we shall see if another number one team goes down tonight. Enjoyed it today, Bart. I will see you tomorrow, my man.
I'll holla.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN+. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.